accuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week we'll highlight the Take Back the American Dream Conference with The Nation publisher Katrina Vandenhoevel, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, Democracy for America Chair Jim Dean, and former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Weiner. We'll also discuss the impact of unemployment in America with former U.S. Secretary of Labor Alexis Herman.
We've been joined by Katrina Vandenhoevel, the editor and publisher of The Nation. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And so here we are today at the Campaign for America's Futures Take Back the American Dream Conference. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing here.
I'm here to be part of this movement. Robert Borisage, head of Campaign for America's Future, and I wrote a cover story for The Nation on can a movement save the American dream? And I'm speaking in about an hour on challenging the mainstream media to report the truth.
Tell me a little bit about that and where you see maybe a lacking from the mainstream media.
I see a lot lacking. I mean, I think, you know, part of what our work is in the biggest sense is to change the story, change the narrative. There is a kind of inside the beltway suffocating consensus, as I would put it, that has made us think that we have a deficit crisis, not a jobs crisis, and that has for too long, it seems to me, demonized public workers. That comes out of the mainstream media nationally. We see it going local, state-based. And, you know, I think, sure, there are problems. We're sitting in D.C. We got to reclaim our government. We do not give up on government. Government has been corroded by corporate money. But that corporate money is not going to rebuild a government that would work for working people and the poor and those without a voice. It's going to demonize the very people who have made this country secure. And that, I think, is one of our challenges, to tell our stories and to give people ammo to think about, to use in their fights, in their communities.
Why do you think that the narrative has gone the way that it has?
A lot of reasons. I think in this country there is this kind of myth of individualism, but that myth has been fueled by a 4 or 5 decade well-funded conservative apparatus designed to make people think that, you know, taxes go into wasteful spending, that we got to deregulate our country, and that government workers are, you know, too many and we can do better. Underlying it all is a belief that, you know, you're on your own, Jack, which is a philosophy I fully disagree with. I think one of the reasons we're in this place is that the mainstream media has served a purpose of making people feel apathetic, cynical, demoralized. And so they don't believe they can act. And in acting, make change. And that change is what we're seeing around the country now. Wisconsin, Ohio, downtown New York near Wall Street. That is change we can believe in, and change our mainstream media too often says ain't possible in this system.
Katrina, what happened to the American dream?
You know, the American dream, let's be honest, means different things to different people. And in many ways, it has not been fulfilled for people in this country, for ethnic and racial minorities, for women until recently, you know. But it has been imperiled by a corporate class that wanted to acquire a lot of wealth at the very top, by terrible inequality, which may be one of the biggest political, social, moral stories of our time. That great inequality, that gap, has subverted and gutted a middle class, has created the highest level of poverty we've seen in recorded times. That's what's happened to it. And I think we need to find a way, not necessarily shared prosperity. I differ here with some of my liberal progressive friends, because I don't think shared is fair when so many have already gotten the gains and so much has been put on the backs of people who deserve better. But I think we need a reset in this country.
You talked a little earlier about job creation versus deficit reduction, and there is a real battle going on in this country about which one should be addressed first.
I wish there was a real battle. I mean, in the streets and cities and towns of America, in the hearts and minds of people, if you ask them time and time again, it is job creation as a first priority, not deficit reduction. But the battle isn't going on in places where those decisions are being made. Look at the Super Committee. Super Committee, talk about a deficit crisis. We got a democracy deficit in this country. And I think that's something we don't pay enough attention to. And how is it that the views of the vast majority of Americans aren't factored in to the debates and the power structure in this country?
What's it going to take to get people back to work?
Well, you know, Robert Reich just gave a brilliant speech here. It's so simple. I mean, you need demand. And what that means in the absence of private spending and corporations sitting on $2 trillion and claiming uncertainties keeping them from investing, you need government spending. You need a Federal Reserve to do more than it's doing. And then in the long term, with growth comes recovery. The best recovery program is a jobs creation program. But we got a political system which at the moment, and sadly President Obama, who's now trying to do more, has too often legitimized the right wing's talking points so that he's in a bind now.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Katrina Vandenhoevel, the nation's editor and publisher. Katrina, talk for a minute about the value of public service in this country and explain why that has gotten lost in the shuffle a little bit.
You know, the overarching story is the denigration of government, the demonization of government, the misunderstanding that we need a humane government to serve the people. But public service has also been tarnished because I think we in the progressive media, Citizens of Conscience Media, don't do a good enough storytelling our success stories. And so we concede to MSM, mainstream media, or to the right wing, those stories which show government not doing it. We got to tell the success stories of postal workers, of teachers, of educators, of nurses, of those in the first responder community. It interests me 10 years after 9/11 when there was a moment. There was a moment when public servants, those first responders, the police, the firefighters, were the heroes, not the CEOs, not the hedge funders. They didn't go into those burning buildings. That spirit needs to be retrieved, and it's a spirit of ennoblement, and it's a spirit where I think a moral compass of America would be better set if we could retrieve that spirit.
Do you see the nation being able to change the course and make it so that public sector employees from the local level through the state level up all the way to the federal level are appreciated for the work that they do and not viewed as something less?
We got to tell those stories. It's the stories. And also, I say that the workers, and many of them, not enough, are in unions. It's that sense of unions as part of a progressive movement that needs to be retrieved, because I think sometimes Americans see unions as set off because the density is so low now. But if we can tell the story of what unions have done to create a middle class and help raise a poor into a middle class and help bring us the 8-hour workday and the weekend, we would be in a better place. But again, it's power, too. We need more people in the power structures who understand that. Building up the Progressive Caucus, which had a good people's budget, which respects labor, which respects public workers and government, but we don't have enough of them.
Lastly, what's next for you? Where's your work going to take you for the rest of the year and beyond?
You know, my work, my day in, day out at The Nation, at thenation.com. I ask your listeners to come to thenation.com, but I have a small book coming out, a collection of my columns called The Change I Believe In, Fighting for Progress in the Age of Obama. So I'm going to be traveling around a little with that.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, publisher of The Nation, thank you so much for
thank
your time.
You.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at insidegovernmentradio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky will discuss her new jobs bill and the value of public service.
Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to buy items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount with promo code AFGEMember. That's all one word. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at insidegovernmentradio.com. We've been joined by Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of Illinois. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much.
So you're here today at the Take Back the American Dream Conference put on by the Campaign for America's Future. Tell us what you'll be doing here.
Well, I'm going to be speaking at a panel on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. I'm also going to be talking at a plenary session just about the economy in general and how it affects working people.
You're obviously very, very concerned about the nation's economy, so much so that you've created a jobs bill. Tell us about that.
I did. I introduced a bill that would create 2.2 million jobs and would it's estimated would reduce the unemployment rate by about 1.3%, which is a start. It's not the whole answer. And these are jobs primarily in the public sector, repairing schools, healthcare workers, daycare workers. The early start program is losing them. Students repairing our parks. Creating a number of corps, C-O-R-P-S, corps, that would hire people. And the president, in a conversation I had with him about a week and a half ago, and I congratulated him on his jobs bill, and he said that he borrowed liberally from the Schakowsky bill. So I was pleased to see that the school improvement part was there. A number of things for youth were in his bill.
Congresswoman, you mentioned that the bill would look to hire a lot of public workers. Can you talk about the need to hire public workers and comment on the value of public service?
You know, there is this insane notion out there that somehow public sector jobs aren't real jobs. I was on a TV show with one of our Republicans colleagues that was saying, the difference is that the government makes jobs and the private sector creates jobs. I just looked at him and said, I don't even know what you're talking about. I mean, it makes no sense to me. Is somehow the worker in a government building or the cop or the firefighter or the teacher, these aren't real jobs? What are they talking about? And, of course, as you spur employment in the public sector, that does have a ripple effect into the private economy. And in fact, I saw in the National Journal there's some big article about how government contracts employ the private sector as well as public sector workers. They're inextricably linked. And when you see layoffs coming now at state and local government levels, those numbers go into the unemployment rate just as private sector jobs do. So of course it's important. When the private sector isn't doing its job to hire people, then the public sector can, as the president said, I think, jumpstart the economy with public sector jobs.
If public sector service doesn't exist, how do people get the things that they need? How do things like Social Security, how does it function? How does Medicare function? How does Medicaid function?
You know, I think we have to make the case even stronger to people. And I think actually Elizabeth Warren had this great riff that she did when talking about why we should tax wealthy people more, talking about no one makes it alone without government help. End of story. Just plain and simple. Every single person relies on the government, even if it's just taking mass transit or driving down a highway to work.
In your jobs bill, the emergency jobs to restore the American dream, how has the response been so far by your colleagues in the House?
Well, we have a good number of co-sponsors in the legislation. I have no expectation that this bill is going to become law, but I am feeling very rewarded that it came into the president's job bill. The goal, I think, of progressives right now is to change the conversation, and we have to do that by being bold and positive and push back aggressively, and to talk about American values, that what they are undermining is the very core of what America is about, which is about a robust middle class, about a good, you know, people who are willing to work, having a job, that work in the public sector is noble work, just as and often more so than a job in the private sector. But we saw how intricately they're linked when the FAA furloughed 4,000 government employees, 70,000 private sector jobs in the construction industry were lost. You cannot separate the two.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky from Illinois. Congresswoman, what's the danger there? I mean, it seems very, very tangible, 70,000 jobs. And if we're talking about FAA jobs, I mean, that's air travel security, is it not?
Of course it is. And so I think that's why I'm saying I think we have the high ground here, that if we are to push back, and, you know, even Sesame Street, who are the people in your neighborhood, the people that are revered in the neighborhood that we teach our children to respect? It's the teacher, it's the firefighter, it's the man in the neighborhood. Those are all the people that are held up for our children, and we sing about them, and we laud them for their work. And so I just think we, you, FG, all of us, need to be proud defenders of the public sector. We need to, and not just on the defense, but on the offense about the private sector and its importance.
And lastly, Congresswoman, where do we go from here?
Well, I think that this is going to be a huge debate coming up. I want to make one other point, though. Barney Frank defined government as those things that we decide to do together. And that's where public workers come in. Make sure that those communal ideals and functions that we have people that proudly wear the badge of the United States of America. So we need to engage all workers, public and private sector workers, because, of course, this is also a political fight. Let's get rid of public sector unions now that we've already ravaged the private sector workers, unions, so that there's only about, 7% are organized anymore. So the right wing is on this crusade to undermine public sector unions, public sector workers. We, in this election cycle, have to be very clear, hold our members of Congress accountable, and say, do you really mean that? Are these the people that you want to cut? One other point. The Project on Government Oversight just did a study that showed that contracting out actually is more expensive than hiring government employees. And so we also need to talk about dollars and cents here, that it is economical to have public sector workers doing public jobs.
Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue from the Take Back the American Dream Conference with Democracy for America Chair Jim Dean and former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Wiener.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Jim Dean, the chair for Democracy for America. Jim, welcome back to the program.
Jason, thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Always fun to have you on the program, Jim. And today we've got you at the Take Back the American Dream Conference put on by the Campaign for America's Future here in Washington. Tell us about it.
Well, this is a great conference at the right time. Because the real theme of this is rebuilding the dream. And they've joined with the movement that Van Jones and Natalie Foster and others have been doing. It now comprises about 80 to 100 groups. We're very honored to be part of this Rebuild the Dream movement. And having this conference here is a great way to bring people together to get a lot smarter about what's going on. Went to a great show, session this morning where we're talking about what's going on in the Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Los Angeles, Boston, San Francisco movement and where that's going. And so we'll be a little bit smarter and in a better position to keep making this stuff happen.
Jim, what happened to the American dream?
Well, you know, in my view, which is not quite the same as everybody else's, but frankly, I think our business leadership went south. And I'm talking about big business here. I mean, small business, of course, is still the innovation engine of innovation and good ways to do things. But big business has become about the cult of the chief executive officer. And unfortunately, we are now in the golden age of the overpaid and underperforming chief executive officer. And these people aren't being held accountable for a lot of really bad behavior and, frankly, stuff that's really damaged this economy.
In your opinion, what do you think needs to change to get that back in line?
Well, other than a new generation of leadership in the big business sector that understands a little bit more about social accountability and personal responsibility, we can't wait for that. It's an obvious change, but it's a generational one. And what we really need to be doing out is being out in the streets right now and working with legislatures at the state, local, and federal level to try to force businesses to behave more responsibly and also prevent a lot of some of this merger activity, which has been the cause of the problem as well. We shouldn't be allowing AT&T and T-Mobile to merge right now. We don't need to be giving more market share to one or two companies. We need to disaggregate this stuff as much as we possibly can to make it more competitive.
And how do you see your organization, your members within your organization, pushing back?
Well, a lot of, it's been a bit catch as catch can, which is one of the reasons we're here at this conference, to get smarter about what other people are doing and where we can plug in. A lot of the work that we've been doing so far has been on trying to preserve things like collective bargaining rights. Because, of course, part of this equation is making sure that businesses are not only offering a living wage to everybody, but also offering opportunities for advancement, which was the hallmark of our economy during previous eras when actually labor unions were quite prominent. It was a great moment of we've had great moments of opportunity in our history where labor unions have played a vital role. So we need to keep collective bargaining rights. We've been working very hard on that in Wisconsin. We're working very hard on that now in Ohio. But the other thing is to go out and, be heard in front of these businesses. Not many people know this, but about 8 months ago, about 300 people gathered outside of Anthem Blue Cross in California because they were about to raise their rates 60% on individual policyholders. They got them at least to defer that. And if we could get more of that going, we can force businesses to behave better.
Do you see things like attacks against collective bargaining rights as almost a signal that we're losing the American dream a little bit?
And yes,
when you preserve collective bargaining rights is when you're going to see the American dream come back into play for people.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think that's a very important part of this. But the other part of this is reestablishing a culture where people accept the fact that if you work for a living in this country, you ought to be able to make a living. And that is something that has been lost really over the last 30 to 40 years, where people and companies, particularly senior managers and chief executives, simply do not value work in this country, and especially among their own employees. And we've got to change that culture around. And that's going to take a long time. It doesn't happen through legislation necessarily. But if you keep fighting on this thing, just as the folks on Occupy Wall Street are, they're changing people's minds. The story of Wisconsin, where those people who hung out in the Capitol for 3 weeks, they got 61% of the voters on their side because they understood this was more than just about a union issue. This is for everybody.
The work that you're doing at Democracy for America, you all have focused heavily on the state level. You mentioned Wisconsin. You're also really going to go after some things in Ohio, too, but not just on the defensive. You're working to go on the offensive. Is that right?
Yeah, Jason, there are great opportunities in other states where they are passing forward-thinking legislation, particularly in the area of campaign finance reform, because the voters all across the board are upset with Citizens United. A lot of states are going to be setting up health care exchanges legislatively this year, and we're hoping they're going to follow the lead of Vermont, which is to include a government option in there, which Vermont passed last year. We do have legislation, particularly in the area of equality. Washington, I believe, is going to have that come up. And we got a couple of states that are going to be doing public financing of elections. And as a resident and voter in Connecticut, I can tell you that it is a home run. We have public financing in Connecticut. It has worked enormously well and gone a long way to getting rid of big business influence on the way state government operates.
Now, how important is it to go on the offensive and to not just be on the defensive all the time?
Well, I think it's important for two reasons. One, the narrative on a lot of this stuff is that these people are just against things. That's not true. Most Americans want to see us move into the 21st century, both socially and economically, and that's what a lot of these pieces of legislation are about. So it's important for us to be out there to make that happen, and it's also important for us, in spite of the mainstream media, to make sure that the voters understand that there's a clear pathway towards modernizing our country, and in spite of what big business likes to say about folks like us being just against something. We're for a lot of stuff. And our members have got some good opportunities that they're letting us know about, and that's what we're going to have going forward.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Democracy for America Chair Jim Dean. Jim, as you look forward and stay on the offensive, what are one or two things that you're really going to try to achieve here coming up in the next few months?
Well, in the next couple of months, it really is about the state legislative agenda. You know, I'm not being dismissive of the fact that there's a huge election year coming up. It's just that, in January, legislatures convene across the country, and the agendas are set, and this is our chance to do things about health care, to do things about strengthening labor rights, which is actually going on in some states as well. My governor in Connecticut, with an executive order, gave child care workers the right to organize, and we need to be in there supporting issues like this, supporting elected officials who do this, and trying to do something about expanding health care, expanding campaign finance reform and good government. And that is really the agenda going forward. I'm not exactly certain where that's going to be. I mentioned we have a marriage equality opportunity in Washington. We might have a public financing opportunity in Maryland. And we know other states are going to be doing more work in this area. And then we're going to move into the elections, because elections are an expression of this. They're a means to an end. They're a means to changing this country to make it better. It's not just about the candidates. It's about making sure we're going to have a legislative body in Congress that's actually going to get something done, unlike the last Congress.
And I'm sure, as you're well aware, you've seen attacks on workers of all kinds in the middle class, particularly public sector workers. Why do you think that public sector workers have such a target on their backs?
Because it's easy for elected officials like Chris Christie to spend their time beating up on public employees, and it's disgraceful. And the interesting thing about this, Jason, and I'll go back to a poll that was run in Wisconsin after the Capitol was taken over for 3 weeks. 61% of people in Wisconsin supported those demonstrators. And the fact of the matter is that people understand this, whether they're in labor or not in labor. And they understand that the opportunities that labor offers, and they understand what's fair. And more importantly, they've gone through layoffs themselves. And they're sick and tired of chief executive officers, whether in the public sector or the private sector, who get up and just blame employees every time things go south for their company or the state's in a debt crisis. So, you know, one of the reasons Chris Christie is still thinking of running for president is because his numbers in New Jersey are tanking right now. And it's because all he's had to say is, the teachers are bad and the teachers are making too much money, which is BS, and everybody knows it. We've got to fight back against this stuff. And I think that we have a public that's ready to listen to this thing, because they're sick and tired of this kind of narrative that's been going on for 30 years.
Do you think that legislators who are advocating for cuts in public services understand the consequences of that?
I wish they did. As you probably know, a lot of these bad unemployment numbers that have been coming out because states are laying off a lot of folks. And the other thing is that the voters see through this cycle about cutting government services and then complaining about the government when they don't perform these services. I mean, this is, look, this stuff is old and people get it. And whether the legislators get it or not, it's a different story. Most legislators, including Republicans in Connecticut, do get it. They'll get up and once in a while and rail a little bit. But they're understanding this a lot better, how important government services are. That requires people. And it also requires good people. It requires the kind of professional development that is in labor. I think they're coming around. If I could just tell you one quick story. I had a friend of mine who's a Republican, who's a hedge fund trader, complain to me about how the bureaucrats of the SEC didn't know enough about his business. And the only thing I could say to him is, like, that's your lucky day, because if they did, you'd probably be in jail by now. And the fact of the matter is that, the more folks we have in this thing, the more we can offer the kind of professional development, the better and more responsive government that we can have. It's an investment. It requires money, but it pays off.
Especially at a time when, in this country, we need to create jobs, not cut them, right?
Absolutely. And create good jobs, and government jobs are good jobs. There's a whole generation of folks out there that need to be plugged into the workforce right now. Otherwise, Occupy Wall Street is going to be a little fairy tale compared to what's going to happen next. So if the legislators know what's good for them, and if governments know what's good for them, and obviously John Kasich and Scott Walker don't, but there are others that do, like Peter Shumlin in Vermont. And if they know what's good for them, creating these jobs and picking up the slack where private the sector is not, is very important to do right now.
Jim Dean, Chair of Democracy for America, as always, thank you for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Jason. I appreciate it.
We've been joined by Bob Wiener, a national issue strategist. Bob was the chief of staff for the House Aging Committee, as well as a former Clinton White House senior staffer. Always a pleasure to have you, Bob.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Jason. And you so bring the facts out, unlike all these other shows that I make a beeline to do your show when you invite me. Thank you very much.
Now, we've got you here today at the Campaign for America's Future Take Back the American Dream Conference in Washington. Tell us about what you're doing here so far.
Well, I'm really thrilled at the subjects that they're doing. America Back to Work, Corrupting Democracy, how citizens can challenge what they did in Wisconsin is just amazing. Social Security and Medicare, the war at home and abroad with Afghanistan, voter suppression. This conference does an amazing, amazing job. I just wish that we were further along with all these conferences that they have every year than we are from a year ago. I'm very frustrated. My agenda, Jason, here is I think we've lost ground on the health bill from when the American people were polling heavily in favor of it, and the insurance companies always turn this thing around. And likewise, I think we're losing ground on Social Security and Medicare, where it's becoming a bit more acceptable, even among some of our side, to do some cuts. And that's outrageous, because the polling shows that the American people do not want cuts in Social Security and Medicare, and the facts haven't changed that it's solvent until 2037 for Social Security, and the health bill added 9 years to Medicare solvency, and you need the national health bill to add 30 million people to health insurance rolls and to provide pre-existing conditions, lifetime, no lifetime caps, and children on the parents' plans until age 26. So the fact that we've lost ground on some of these core issues to me means that we love Obama in his issues and in how he stands, but he has got to be more effective in how he handles these issues and mobilizes, and we all have to help him.
Bob, we had you on the program earlier this year at the Health Action Now conference. The Affordable Care Act was being implemented, and you're saying we're just not as far along as we should be since then, right?
We're losing ground. The Supreme Court today begins taking up the health bill. And if the administration thinks that this court, because of the concept of federal power, where they use the examples in their statement of, oh, they approved Social Security, and they approved the Voting Rights Act, they approved the Civil Rights Act, that's an eon ago. This is the most conservative court since the 30s, which overturned Roosevelt's New Deal. This is the most, and that's according to Jeff Toobin, who's a pretty objective guy for CNN and others. This court lives on 5-4 rulings against Citizens United, allowing corporations to anonymously give to TV ads, and anti-environmental regulations and pro-corporate regulations. This court has been living on 5-4 rulings, and anybody who thinks Anthony Kennedy is Senator Day O'Connor doesn't know which end is up. And so I've got an op-ed that's going to be running very shortly in a major paper that's going to show that this court is likely to rule 5-4 against the health bill. And that means both the mandate and against those critical provisions of lifetime caps and children on the plan until 26, also no caps and all of those things. Preventive health care, all the great provisions that the health care bill does that the American people wanted. So I'm very concerned about where we are versus a year ago when we all worked very hard, and 2 years ago when we all worked very hard, and this conference played an instrumental role. And you remember it going on all over the 30 radio stations and networks that were here, including you, Jason, with your key one being Inside Washington and the one that everybody listens to here in town, that made the case that we wanted a 50-vote margin, not a 60-vote margin. And we made that case, and Reid and Rahm both reversed because we said call Rahm and call Reid, and they reversed the strategy and allowed the health bill to go through on what the Constitution allows, which is a 51-vote margin, not a 60-vote margin. So we have lost some enormous ground, and it's because the Republicans and the insurance companies are so effective. I don't see the ads saying the health bill's working and it covers all these people. I don't see those ads. All I see is the corporate ads that say, vote against Governor so-and-so who's running for re-election because he supports Obamacare and Obamacare is bad. That's all the ads I see. I don't see our ads. So we've lost ground. We have to stop hiding under the table about the issues we're proud of. We have to show that the insurance companies again this year are doubling insurance, whether it's 10%, it's double every decade, another 10% in increased premiums this year. Even though they make hundreds of billions of dollars, they're going a 10% increase on premiums again this year. We have to make the case that unless we have this health bill, all the reasons we passed it are going to fall by the wayside. And we have to make the case that Social Security has stopped poverty for three-quarters of seniors. When you add Social Security and Medicare, Medicare a quarter, Social Security half, has ended poverty among seniors. The only group, by the way, that stayed stable with 7% poverty among its group. Every other group added poverty to record numbers this year. The only group that stayed stable was seniors in the Census Bureau numbers that just came out. And that's because of Social Security and Medicare. So if you want to cost the United States of America enormous dollars in welfare, food stamps, and housing, if you want to charge the United States taxpayers enormous amount of dollars, go ahead. Cut Social Security. Cut Medicare. Watch what happens. Every little proportion that you cut Social Security and Medicare, whether it's in increasing the age, whether it's in adding copays, whether it's in depleting benefits, is going to be an increase in the amount of poverty among seniors, because that's the success. It's been the most successful program, social program, in the history of the United States of America. So I did an op-ed on that cutting Medicare will cost the nation money. And I invite our listeners to go to my website, wienerpublic.com, and check out the op-ed that I have on cutting Medicare and Social Security. It was in the Miami Herald. Will cost the nation money.
So why do it?
Because the Republicans are pro-corporate. And I remember a 90-year-old friend who died last year said to me, and he was a member of my local Democratic town committee, actually, he said he's never seen a president or a party that got themselves elected for only one reason, to give tax breaks to their rich friends. And that's the reason. That's their only agenda, is to pander to the corporate interests in this country. And don't let anybody nonsense you that it's we're helping the job creators. Because I also did an op-ed in the Miami Herald that shows that GDP growth under the Democratic presidents has been 5.5%. Under Republican presidents, who've had an agenda of only tax cuts for rich and corporations and only increasing money for defense contractors, our GDP, which is effectively giving money to a sieve, it doesn't really help in the United States and our jobs. GDP growth under Republican presidents has been 1.5%. That's 5.5% versus 1.5%. GDP, the absolute number that the Washington Post said, look at GDP if you're looking at who really cuts the budget. Well, I want to look at GDP. If they're saying that's the gold standard is GDP, then that's the facts. The Democrats have done it, 5.5%. The Republicans, with their policies, have not, and they've been at 1.5%. And their policies have been tax cuts. By the way, Obama, and I love what we do because he does the best that he can, but he shouldn't be caving. We shouldn't be having 40% of our stimulus plans as tax cuts. That's nonsense. It's what has caused only a 1.5% GDP growth. There is no such thing as trickle down. Trickle down hasn't worked since Herbert Hoover tried it. Trickle down doesn't work. They spend their money on yachts and hedge funds. That's what trickle down means, when they get more money for the rich. So you don't give money to the rich. You give it to the middle and to the lowers. You do direct people programs. You do direct jobs programs. And that's how you improve America. And that's what Bill Clinton did, by the way. And when we created 23 million jobs, didn't have the two wars, and had budget surpluses by the end of his administration. So this nonsense of a philosophy of tax cuts and governing by cooperation and give them their tax cuts and make it half your program means we are shafting America.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with national issue strategist Bob Wiener. Bob, on the piece about President Obama, you wrote an op-ed as well suggesting ways that he could become a better president. Share some of that with us.
Well, I did. I purposely picked the Michigan Chronicle, which is the six times in the last 12 years has been named the leading African-American newspaper in America, to call it still wanting to make Obama a better president. The bottom line, Jason, is don't cave. Play hardball. We have a Democratic Senate. We have the White House. And the Republicans, if they're going to block it in the House, great. We'll take the House back over. Don't cave. Don't cave on Republican tax cuts. And don't cave on cutting Social Security and Medicare, which have saved poverty in America among seniors. It stopped it. And by the way, they're solvent. And don't say there's no trust fund. There is, because seniors under the Pepper, O'Neill, and Reagan deal actually created a deal where seniors gave in. And as a result, the fund from the Social Security fund gives them back the money. And don't say that young people want changes, even though seniors don't, because every senior out there wants their grandchildren to have the same Social Security they do. And that's the reason, by the way, why that New York race flipped, a 30-year Republican seat flipped to the Democrats, because that candidate we had was firm on Social Security and Medicare. Don't cave on these issues. If you cave, we're handing the Republicans the store. We're handing them the 2012 election. So my advice to President Obama is, not only in your speeches, by the way, yeah, you've improved your speeches a little, and there's a little bit of more enthusiasm, a little bit more tone in the recent speeches, and everybody's praising him for it, but that means in action, too. Don't ultimately get to the table on the jobs bill like you did on the tax bill and like you did on TARP and cave and give the Republicans their tax cuts because, gee, that's all you can get and you have to govern. I'm sick of this. We have to govern by compromise when the compromise shafts America.
Bob, you obviously very well versed in health care, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Talk about the importance of those programs and what they really mean for real people.
They mean lifespan. They mean that in America, we are 45th roughly in both lifespan and infant mortality. So don't give us garbage that we have the best health care plan in America. And we have lost in size. We're no longer the tallest. We're now about sixth or seventh in tallest. We have depleted because the insurance companies control us. And so for us to not have a real health plan, that's another place where Obama caved and he shouldn't have. We should have gone to a single payer, i.e. Medicare-like health bill, instead of the private sector insurance company bills. And that those votes were there in the House. And if we had gone to a 50-vote margin instead of a 60-vote margin in the Senate, the votes were there in the Senate for it. So a majority of the House and Senate, when we did this 2 years ago, had the votes for health care, and we caved, even though the majority of the American people wanted a real health care plan that would have given us the rights to our health care, not given them to the insurance companies to make the decisions for us, where you have to fight, and only the best anti-bureaucrat among us can actually fight insurance company decisions and figure out how to go through that process and make the phone calls and the challenges and the appeals and all of that. So most people cave on their insurance company challenges and just pay the difference or go into poverty and foreclosure. You know, a third of the home foreclosures is because people can't afford their health care. So one crisis spirals into another. That's what it means for America, is you have millions of people that can't afford health care. They're dying sooner. Their kids aren't growing up because they have illnesses and there's infant mortality. And we are in the 40s in the world. America, this great country, which actually still has more money than any other country. And you know, Jason, the corporations are making tons of money. It's the people that aren't. I'm astounded that the oil companies still are making their literally hundreds of billions in profits. The health insurance companies are still making their literally hundreds of billions in profits. But we have a 9-point, whatever, pick one or two, it varies, it flips back and forth, 9% unemployment rate. And we have shipped our jobs overseas. The corporations are making tons of money. The rich are getting their tax breaks. And the people aren't working in America. So it all falls from one to the other. And that's what it means to us.
So, Bob, lastly, where's the country heading after this?
I fear for the health bill, and I fear for Social Security, and I fear for Medicare, and I fear for our kids on college, because we have been conned on the Republican plans to cut tax breaks for the rich as the solution for all ills in America. That is not the solution for all ills. And so my hope is that we go in this next election, that the American people get the message that our advertising shapes up, it's sharper, and that we do a better job of, instead of just letting the Republicans have the ads against the health bill, and we have nothing, for example. I hope we figure it out by this kind of a conference, shape up and take back America. That's my hope.
Bob Wiener, former Clinton White House senior staffer and national issues strategist. As always, thank you for your time.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll address the impact of unemployment in America with former U.S. Secretary of Labor Alexis Herman.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Alexis Herman, the former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me to be with you.
Of course, today you're here at the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation's annual legislative conference. Tell me about what you've done so far.
Well, so far, I opened the legislative conference this morning as the moderator of the jobs panel, where we had the opportunity to talk about the obviously the impact of the unemployment situation in our community. We had a lot of great leaders on the panel. Bill Lucey, former Secretary of Treasury of AFSCME, was there. We had Congresswoman Waters and Cleaver, Mark Morial of the National Urban League, Dr. Julianne Malvo. So we had a great panel, great discussion about just the economic realities and what is it we need to do to support the passage of the jobs bill.
What did you take away from the panel in terms of how we're going to get people working in this country again?
I think the big takeaways from the panel this morning was, first of all, a recognition that we can't rely on government alone, that we've got to figure out what it means to organize and to mobilize in our own communities back home, and that as partisan as this environment is in Washington right now, that we need to help create more of a bipartisan environment back home. And so it's not enough to visit Democratic legislators. We have to visit Republican legislators as well. This is a problem that's a crisis for all of America. It's acute in the black community, but it's a problem for all of America. And therefore, we have to let our voices be heard more frequently.
In your opinion, what's the best way to get people back to work? And what are the kinds of jobs that we should be focusing on creating?
Well, I think there's several strategies. Obviously, we've got to do more, I think, to incentivize businesses to hire workers. So I think a part of what the president has proposed in terms of payroll tax breaks, in terms of incentives for hiring the unemployed worker today is very important. But in addition to that, I think we've got to figure out what we do to create an economy that's a growth economy, because it's only when you have a growth economy can you really have job creation. And so what is it we need to do to stimulate the public sector as well as the private sector? So I am a big proponent of looking at some of the infrastructure issues in our own country, whether it's the reconstruction of our schools, our bridges, our highways. There's a lot that we can do to stimulate job creation through the rebuilding of our own infrastructure here at home. I also think that when we look at what it means to be in this global economy today, that we've got to be very conscious of how we compete in the global economy, which means we've got to make greater investments in education and in training a workforce of the future.
How has the labor situation changed from when you were Secretary of Labor to now? And, of course, any similarities that you might still see?
Well, I think the big difference, of course, is that when I was Secretary of Labor, we had the lowest unemployment rates since the Bureau of Labor Statistics had been keeping the books going back almost 30 to 35 years, and that was because we had a growth economy. It was also because we worked hard to pass the president's economic bill to create an environment where we could stimulate the economy. I think what's very different and very disappointing today is that inability to work across the aisle to get something good for the greater good of the country. I had the opportunity to work with Republicans and Democrats alike, to create the kind of job environment that we needed to put a real focus on young people, for instance, and to stimulate certain sectors of the economy that were most in need. That same willingness and that same spirit that helped us do that when I was Secretary of Labor certainly is not there today, and it's very disappointing, and we've got to find a way to work together for the good of the American people.
I'd like for you to talk a little bit about the value of public workers and the services that they provide the American people.
I think we would not have the successful country that we have today that we've had historically were it not for public workers in our country. I think it is so unfortunate that we now demonize people in the public sector, people who carry on critical functions for our economy, and not understand that this is not about the public sector versus the private sector. We need both, and that's the only way that we've worked successfully as a country. And so I'm all for lifting out and raising up and calling out, if you will, visible roles, visible jobs of what public workers really do, so that people appreciate, you know, you couldn't do what you do, okay, were it not for hard-working Americans who are working in the public sector.
Do you think that those who are advocating for cuts to the federal workforce, to public service, do you think they understand the real consequences of doing that? What happens to the services that are being provided? Do you think that
no.
consequence is understood?
No, I definitely don't think the consequence is understood. That's why I say I think we've got to go back to basics and not take it for granted. And I think we've got to call out those jobs, those roles that are critical in the public sector that keep our economy going. And it's not just our economy. I think we've got to personalize it. I think we've got to understand how it impacts your home and my home, and the things that we take for granted would not be possible were it not for so many public sector workers.
Now, this year, the theme for the annual legislative conference is I Lead, I Serve, which really tries to focus on community service. Can you talk a little bit about that need for strong community service, especially in a day and age like today when so many people are down and out of work and underemployed?
I think the only way we get this country back on the right track again is to rekindle this spirit of community service. And I think it's tougher to do today when you have so many people out of work, so many people who have lost hope, so many people who just can't figure out how they're going to make it from day to day. It's tough to talk about how do you keep and make a community connection. And that's why we've got to put the emphasis, I think, that the Congressional Black Caucus is putting on it, that without keeping those community connections, without empowering the community, there's strength in numbers. And we've got to understand that the better some of us do, the better all of us do. And so how do we move together with a sense of service and a sense of community?
Now, when you were Secretary of Labor, talk about some of the challenges that you faced and maybe how your previous experience enabled you to meet and overcome those challenges.
Well, I had so many challenges as Secretary of Labor. I think for me, probably as I think of some of the biggest challenges, it was the passage of the Welfare to Work Bill that was a big issue in terms of how do you put a human face on individuals who are making that transition from welfare to work, and to say, like today, that these are people who want to work. They want to be able to take care of their families. They want to serve. And we have to stop demonizing people. And so trying to do that with a sense of dignity was a very important part of my focus. The high rates of youth unemployment, I was determined then to make sure that I thought for once and for all that we would make a real dent in the future of young people, and to get those rates down that had hovered at 30% and 35% for years. And so we made a conscious effort to make an investment into the infrastructure of where young people were, and to have special outreach initiatives targeted to them. And we were successful in actually cutting that unemployment rate in half for the first time for our young people. I also took on the challenge of workplace safety, and I was very proud of the fact to be able to say that during my tenure that we actually recorded the safest workplaces on record in the history of the Department of Labor.
Former Secretary of Labor Alexis Herman, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for inviting me to be with you, Jason, and good luck to you.
Thank you to our guests this week, The Nation publisher Katrina Vandenhoevel, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, Democracy for America Chair Jim Dean, former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Weiner, and former U.S. Secretary of Labor Alexis Herman. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government.